You're listening to the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWocker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. iwoca.co.uk.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm joined by Ivan Gotti, is it? Or Daniel Freib?
Yeah, it could be Ivan Gotti. So I'm wearing a Polti casquet, aren't I, chaps? It's an early Polti casquet, so we're talking to 1994, Gianni Bugno sort of Polti era, isn't it? This was the colours that he was wearing when he won the 94 Tour of Flanders. If I'm not mistaken, Napalm?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, very distinctive logo, isn't it? The Polti logo. Steam cleaners, is that Polti?
Iron steam cleaners, yeah. Infamously receptacles, which were very handy for carrying EPO in the 1988 Tour de France.
Yeah, clever.
The vacuum cleaners,
yeah.
That is.
Yeah. Well, you're wearing a T-shirt, yeah, I mean, there, Lionel, honouring a rider who was in his mid-20s around that time.
I dug out the Extinction Rebellion T-shirt for a little sentence or two in News Roundup, which we'll come to.
Well, Rebellion, of course, was this era of Polti. He rode for Polti, I think, once in about 94 and then again a few years later.
And Richard, you're wearing a Garmin cap.
Yeah.
Is this after you've successfully held the company to ransom this week? Is that right? Shouldn't joke, really.
Shouldn't joke. I'm a victim of that, Lionel, as I'm sure lots of our listeners are too. Although the ride that I did last night seems to have been updated now onto Strava from my Garmin device, so that's nice. On the subject of the great Garmin hack, we were asked about that actually by a listener, weren't we? Not really something we would normally cover, but it's been covered in the latest episode of Service Course, which came out yesterday by Tom Wally and Lizzie Banks. Really interesting. They've spoken to a responsible hacker and sort of dug into the Garmin hack a little bit. It's a fascinating story.
Is that a bit like a smooth criminal?
A bit like that, yeah, exactly.
It's a bit of an oxymoron, isn't it?
But listen, guys, the news is out now. It came out last night. My new job. You'll understand the reasons why I kept that quiet until it was released last night. Didn't know it was coming out last night. Caught me by surprise. But don't worry, I'll be carrying on. I'll be heading up Secret Intelligence in the UK and also carrying on with the Cycling Podcast, so no need to worry about that.
Richard Moore in intelligence, is that also an oxymoron?
Well, I've kept my intelligence a great secret, so I'm perfect for this job. The chap who has been appointed to head of Secret Intelligence in the UK, a guy called Richard Moore, not me, is the former ambassador to Turkey, the British ambassador to Turkey, and we used to get confused quite a lot on Twitter, and he was a big Twitter user back then. Not so much now, funnily enough, I don't think. But we exchanged some direct messages because I kept getting requests from people looking for visas and so on in Turkey.
No, that was just people calling you a Turk.
Complaining about various Turkey-related things. And he was getting people asking him about doping and cycling, which he was very, very confused about. So he found that very funny. Anyway, listen, no more nonsense, because racing is back, and we're recording after watching the first mountaintop finish at the Vuelta Burgos, won by Remco Evenepoel. We'll talk about that a little bit in part one coming up, but first of all, Lionel, have you got a news roundup, please?
We have indeed. I'll leave the Vuelta a Burgos racing to the section where we talk about the race, but quite a lot of coronavirus-related news from Burgos. Alex Dowsett of Israel Startup Nation was unable to take the start of the Vuelta a Burgos because his teammate Omer Goldstein had tested positive for COVID-19. Goldstein had been in contact with Itamar Einhorn, his teammate, and Dowsett, when he arrived at the Vuelta a Burgos, had dinner with Einhorn, and so they took the precaution, once they knew that Goldstein had tested positive for COVID-19, to take the riders out of the race. race. Both Dowsett and Einhorn have, Einhorn has since tested negative. So a kind of a chain reaction there. You know, Dowsett kind of a couple of steps removed from contact with someone who had COVID-19, but still had an impact on his race. Three UAE Team Emirates riders also pulled out of the Vuelta a Burgos and have subsequently tested negative. Sebastian Milano, Christian Munoz and Camilo Ardia. They rode stage one on Tuesday, but didn't start stage two on Wednesday because they'd been in contact with somebody who tested positive on the Tuesday. So this is going to be a recurring theme, I think, and it's going to be a case of getting lucky, really, isn't it? Because any kind of contact with somebody who has the virus or even has symptoms of the virus could disrupt a rider's plans. Some racing has been disrupted as well. The two Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal and Quebec have been cancelled. The Bowls Women's Tour has also been cancelled, which leaves just one women's stage race on the calendar. That will be the Giro Rosa. And the CCC Live women's team pulled out of the two women's races in northern Spain because of their team doctor's concerns about COVID-19. So this is going to just be something that occurs and reoccurs as the season unfolds.
Just on that, Lionel, before we move on, sorry, I mentioned service course already. Lizzie Banks also quite interesting on that, on those races in Spain and some of the protocols that she and her fellow professionals are having to go through just in order to race. So tune into service course if you want to hear a bit more about that.
With the racing that's underway, as I said, we'll talk about Burgos shortly, but there was also the Sibiu Tour in Romania, which Bora Hansgrohe riders dominated. Gregor Mühlberger won a couple of stages. Pascal Ackermann won another couple. Mühlberger won overall ahead of his teammate Patrick Conrad. But Davide Rebellin, eighth at the age of 48. He's actually 49 in 10 days' time and still racing. Extraordinary. No sign of extinction Rebellin's career yet.
This might be an opportune moment, Napalm, to issue a real-time in-play erratum on Rebellin earlier. I think I said that he rode for Polsi for the first time in 94. It was actually 96, then he had a year at La France des Jeux and then came back in 98.
Of course, started his career in 1956.
1992, actually.
A couple of women's races in northern Spain at the weekend, both won by Annemiek van Vleuten. The Clásica Femenina Navarra, she was a minute and 14 seconds ahead of Elisa Longo-Borghini. And then in the Imacumen Sarria race in Durango, she won again, this time 18 seconds ahead of Anna van der Breggen. So a very good weekend's work for the world champion. Daniel, the Milan-San Remo course has been significantly altered, hasn't it? So normally, I mean, it's still going from Milan to San Remo, but it's taking a more inland route rather than going down and doing a long stretch along the coast. It's really just coming down and then it's going to do the Cipressa and the Poggio more or less along the coast, isn't it? Removing some of the climbs as well. So the course is actually significantly different to what we're used to.
Yes, Napalm, although I would say it's more difficult. If you can imagine, if you think of Milan, usually the route heads down to the coast at about 7 o'clock, if you can imagine that, and now it's sort of going to 8 o'clock, so it's going further into Piedmont. Some of our favourite haunts, Napalm, it's going through sort of Barbaresco, Barolo territory, so through the Lange Hills, and it's actually quite lumpy in that section, and then there is a big climb which is sort of substituting the Turchino, it's the Colle di Nava, but it's not difficult, but then there's a long descent to the coast, and in theory the Cipressa and the Poggio, but there's been more question marks thrown up today, so we're speaking on Thursday. These route changes have stemmed from the opposition of the various sort of local mayors in those coastal towns, because it's a very busy time of year and down on the Ligurian coast. They're worried about the tourists getting sort of snagged up in the with the race. And they've all given their approval now to the race going using the coastal road, at least down by the Cipressa and the Poggio, except one, and that's in the little village Santo Stefano al Mare, which is the little village that the race should descend into off the Cipressa. And now the decision is going to be put to the Imperia, which is the sort of province, their government, and they're going to have the final say on whether the race actually goes through or not. I mean, there aren't many options, to be honest, if it's a no from them. I mean, there is one possibility. For years they've talked about inserting this other climb, La Pompeiana, as well as the Cipressa. So it would go Cipressa, Pompeiana, Poggio. They could come down to the coast, skip the Cipressa and do a circuit of the Pompeiana, that then onto the Poggio. That's the only real solution I can imagine. But it is, if it does go ahead, as Arceus plan to go ahead, then it's going to be hillier. It should suit more sort of, well, riders like maybe Philippe Gilbert. Alaphilippe, of course, has already won Milan-San Remo. It will suit him even more.
Will it add any distance, Daniel, that detour?
A few kilometres.
So could it take it over 300 kilometres then, because it's close?
Well, they will. I think they've been very cute with the length of the neutralised zone, and they will take it right up to, so it will be 299 point something.
Plus about 30k in the neutralised zone.
Yeah, plus a few white lies possibly along the way, a few Torriani-esque.
But no Turchino and none of the three capi that normally lead into that finale. So quite different, but well, fingers crossed that the Cipressa gets the green light. Not a lot of time to sort that out and get the local mayors on side, but there we go. The Giro route has been confirmed as well, and quite different to what was unveiled last year. Of course, the Grande Partenza in Hungary is off. Daniel, what is the latest?
So, chaps, as we suspected, the race is going to start from Palermo, so the biggest city in Sicily, and it's going to start with, I suppose you could say it's a downhill time trial. Starts at about, or just over 300 metres above sea level, and finishes more or less at sea level, and it's about 15 kilometres. So it is going to lose a fair amount of altitude in those 15 kilometres. So that should be interesting. So that's an extra stage now in Sicily. There were supposed to be three, now there are four. Where have they found the other two stages, having effectively airbrushed the three that was supposed to be in Hungary? Well, one they've found by basically splitting the stage in the first week that was supposed to go from Calabria, so that's right down in the sort of toe of Italy, across to the heel. That was supposed to be one stage, finishing in Brindisi. Now they're sort of cutting it in two and making two stages of it. And then they've also added a mountain stage on stage 9. It's going to finish at Roccaraso, sort of in the Apennines, in Abruzzo. And it's a tough stage. There isn't just a long final climb up to Roccaraso, but there's the Passo Lanciano, which is most of the famous blockhouse climb. And it's going to be a tough day, that is, on stage 9. And, you know, when the route was initially announced a few months ago, we thought that the middle week looked a bit light on mountains and might not be the greatest spectacle. That difficult ninth stage should spice things up considerably.
A couple of other bits of news floating around. One is that Jumbo-Visma are to set up a women's team and make Marianne Vos their first big signing. From the cycling podcast Feminine, Richard, is that something you've had your eyes
well,
on?
Well, we will be talking about this in next week's episode of the cycling podcast Feminine. That should be out middle of next week. We will talk about that. I wonder if we'll see Annemiek van Vleuten join her. In a recent episode we did about van Vleuten, their friendship became apparent. I wasn't really too aware of that, but Vos and van Vleuten are pretty close. And they, you know, there's been some talk of Van Vleuten leaving Mitchelton Scott as well, so who knows. But an interesting move for Jumbo-Visma, and it's come, it's been instigated, it seems, by the sponsors. And there's some connection with the Park Hotel Valkenburg team as well. The manager there is taking over the Jumbo-Visma ladies team. So, as I say, more on that in next week's Cycling Podcast Femina.
Now, the 2020 calendar is about to restart. The UCI has published the 2021 calendar, and it looks a lot more familiar to us. A couple of things that jumped out to me were that the Tour de France is moving a little bit earlier. We'll start at the end of June to make way for the Olympic Games, as it would have done this year had coronavirus not caused so much disruption. The latest rumours, strong rumours, are that the race may not start in Denmark in 2021 as planned, but instead will shift to 2022. That's because there's a bit of a fixture clash in Copenhagen, because the city is also hosting a last 16 match in the Euro 2020 football tournament, which is being held in 2021, but they're still calling it Euro 20. It's getting Euro 2020. It's still getting a bit complicated, this, but it's possible that Copenhagen won't host the start next year and we'll have to wait until 2022, and there are rumours that maybe Brittany will step in to host the start next year.
Napalm, can I add one bit of news?
Yep.
Just a bit of news on Mario Cipollini, if I may. In our two episodes dedicated to him during our Giro, we talked about the domestic violence case in which he's been involved for a few months now. And this stemmed from an alleged altercation with his ex-wife at her place of work, which is a sort of gym beauty salon, in January 2017. Well, there's been an update to that, meaning the latest hearing in Lucca, where Cipollini lives in Tuscany. And his brother-in-law was called as a witness, and he's made numerous claims about Cipollini threatening members of the family and also being violent towards his ex-wife, Sabrina Landucci, long before the incident which gave rise to the case. The next hearing is going to be on the 18th of November. Now, while this has been going on, coincidentally or not, Mario Cipollini has been very busy on Instagram for a few months now, but particularly in the last few weeks, promoting his bike brand. He's got a new Bengal kitten that he's been showing off. But he's also been getting very animated and exercised by what the coronavirus crisis means and will mean for cycling in the junior categories in Italy. This concern, shall we say, has now spawned what he's referring to as a personal crusade to get grassroots cycling in Italy moving again. And personal because he says no one in the Italian cycling establishment, be it National Federation or Gazzetta dello Sport, are doing anything. One of Cipollini's ideas was to have a Giro d'Italia dei Bambini, a kids' Giro, whereby he'd follow the race around as a kind of Pied Piper, and on the morning of the stages he'd meet local kids and go on rides with them, and they'd all get a pink jersey at the end. But La Gazzetta, the organisers of the Giro, apparently aren't interested. Now Cipollini wants to organise some kind of mass pilgrimage to Cesenatico in honour of Marco Pantani. So all very noble, very entertaining, because he's a great talker. But I just thought I'd raise it because we talked about and we tried to grapple with this paradox of Cipollini when we did our episodes on him. That, you know, the good and the bad of Cipollini. It's also just struck me once again how the sort of awkwardness that we often talk about, the very well-documented doping allegations against him and compounded by what we are finding out now about his private life, don't appear to cause too much sheepishness in Italy, or certainly some Italians. You know, sort of despite the fact that Italy's loss of kind of prestige in Italy has a lot to do with the fact that a whole generation of Italian riders was pretty much wiped out by doping scandals. So, I thought it was, you know, it's just an interesting sort of talking point, not one we've got a lot of time to go into in any more depth now. But, you know, we've talked about it so much over the last few weeks, and I think maybe because this whole pause with lockdown has given us pause for thought and reflection on, you know, the history of cycling, how there's this generation still which we don't know what to do with. We talked a lot about them when the Armstrong documentary was released on Netflix, and this is another example of just how cycling hasn't really been able to process its collective trauma of those 10 or 15 or 20 years.
Just very finally on that before we move on, not really on Cipollini, but on his mission to promote cycling among youngsters. We support the Scuola Ciclismo Ceni during our Giro through the sale of Stacey Snyder's mugs. We were able to send them
and the wine, Rich, from Divine.
Yeah, so about €4,500, I think, in the end they got. And I got an email from Eduardo from the Scuola Ciclismo Ceni to say that on Saturday, August the 1st, they'll have their first race of the season. Three of their under-16s are taking part in the Italian Time Trial Championships near Perugia. And the day after that, their team is organising an under-16 race over 77 kilometres. There'll be a prize awarded in their memory of one of their volunteers who died in March from COVID-19. So they're getting up and going again with their squad of young riders, and it's great to get an update from them.
You're listening to the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a business, find out more at iWalker.co.uk. iWOCA.co.uk.
Thank you very much indeed to our title sponsor, iWalker. I caught up with iWalker earlier this week. We said in last week's podcast that you can apply now for a CBIL, that's the Coronavirus Business Interruption Loan Scheme. iWalker are accredited by the British Business Bank to offer these. Until now, you've only been able to register interest, but now you can actually apply for between £50,000 and £350,000. If you apply, then I walk up, call you back, and walk you through the process. It takes 3 days to a week to get all that sorted, so it's very quick, and this is what Iwaka pride themselves on. They're also offering their flexi loans again, from £1,000 to £200,000, which can, they said, be a good alternative to an overdraft for a small business. And I think they're delighted to be up and running again and feeling that things are returning to some form of normality for a lot of their customers. So if you're a small business owner, or you know someone who runs a small business, and you need finance, do have a look at iwaka.co.uk. They may well be able to help you. Now, Lionel, we're going to talk about the racing, but I think we're going to hear from a few of the riders taking part in Burgos.
This is New Zealander Paddy Bevin, who rides for Team CCC.
It was weird. I think after everything that everyone's been through over the last kind of 4 or 5 months, it was kind of weird to actually sign on and race again, because I think mainly because it felt so far away. So having been here as everything kind of hit peak in Europe, and then going through everything we went through, I personally flew back to New Zealand for just over 2 months in the end. And so yeah, if you're back in New Zealand in April, you're a long way from racing at all. So to kind of have the racing on the horizon was good, and then to actually get there, because obviously everything moves so quickly that you finally get here and race, it seemed a little bit surreal that they'd kind of cleared all those hurdles to be back racing. The main protocols we had coming in were the PCR tests we had to do in the week leading up, and I think for cycling to survive at the moment, I think everyone turning up healthy is the number one defence we have, and obviously guys all over Europe have to get those tests done. With all those negative tests, it kind of creates that barrier before we get here, and then we get here, and the time around the team has changed quite a lot. We're in masks all the time, we're hand washing all the time, and a lot of that is quite restrictive really, but at the end of the day the cost of that, like the effort that goes into that, is pretty minor compared to being able to race, and overall it's not really that taxing. And At a kind of basal level, it's like we need to stay healthy anyway. A lot of the things we do are the same. It's just the fact that they are monitored and forced upon the whole team.
Charlie Quarterman rides for Trek Segafredo.
It's pretty strange returning to racing. I was surprised I hadn't forgotten how to pin my numbers on, actually, after all this time. To be honest, yeah, there are a few precautions we have to take, but at this point, after all this time off, you do whatever it takes. So actually, I'm here in Spain without knowing how or when I'll get back to the UK because of the government quarantine law, the new one that just came in before I left. But no, it feels amazing to be back in the peloton. Although I think it took everyone maybe a couple of hours to get the feeling in the peloton again. Like, the peloton was moving a little bit more spread out, but there's a lot of touching of the brakes and movement on the smaller roads, that's for sure. But actually, it turned out to be quite a nice stage. A little bit hot. After a bit of a tough one on the big mountain middle of the stage, we actually managed to split the peloton in the crosswinds with about 50k to go, which was a lot of fun. So we had all seven of us in the front echelon, which was quite exciting. After all this time, yeah, that felt quite special to be in this situation. I wasn't really ready to be back in it like this, but it feels amazing to be back anyway. In terms of the protocols, it's not crazy. I'd say it feels pretty normal after the way things have been the last few months, to be honest, in terms of wearing a face mask where it's possible, like around the hotel and before you get to the dinner table, and also as you go to the sign-on, you have to wear the face mask. The strangest thing was probably sitting on the start line and taking it off with about a minute to go and putting it in a bin. Quite an unusual one. I guess it's for the safety of the fans, but yeah, that felt a little bit strange. But yeah, apart from that, we've been very safe. We've had our team bubble. Lots of tips, lots of instructions from the team doctor, and yeah, we've been following the guidelines. I haven't felt at risk at all, to be honest. It's been very normal. It's been great. But yeah, it's an incredible feeling to be back anyway.
Attila Valta rides for Team CCC.
To be honest, I feel nervous, not outside the race, but inside the peloton is a strange feeling. We didn't have so hard first 2 days, but I just feel so tired. My mind is tired, all the stress. Yesterday I got involved in a crash. to pay attention, to focus all day is something you cannot train, maybe with some pacing or some hard moments, but it's not what you're training. You can only train it on the race. So I feel tired, but I feel really happy that it's finally begun. And I feel like it almost like nothing has happened in the past 4 months. I feel like we have raced all the time. We have many protocols. In one moment I think it's too much, in the other moment I think, oh, I should do more. I should wear the mask even on the bike, because there are also some connection with the riders, even with the sweating and everything. So I try to keep safe, not because I'm afraid of the virus, but these protocols are to save the cycling itself, I think, to save the teams and to save the racing, because if we get tested positive, we can stay here, we can stuck in a hotel for 2 weeks, and that's I think that's a nightmare. That's almost like a prison for 2 weeks away from your team and family. I don't know what will happen if I tested positive. It will be a really hard situation. So we do our best. We don't even touch the food. The chef is taking the food for us. We wearing the mask in the bus, which is sounds ridiculous, but you never know. We wear the mask on the massage. Hand sanitizers everywhere in the podiums before the start, and we start the race with the mask, and like 10 seconds before the start we take off the mask. So it sounds ridiculous, but I hope that less and less riders will be positive, and then we can continue as it planned this next 4 months.
Fue un trabajo de equipo porque todo el tiempo estuvimos juntos. Hoy no trabajamos para controlar la fuga porque teníamos tres corredores menos. Entonces era un golpe para nosotros no tener a Molano, que era uno de mis lanzadores, y bueno, contamos con las piernas, contamos con la suerte y el momento indicado. Creo que todo se nos juntó para hacer.
Well, it's very nice to hear from some bike riders who've been taking part in races. The final voice there was Fernando Gaviria of UAE Team Emirates, who was a very convincing winner of Stage 2. Daniel, you made the joke on Twitter that he had socially distanced himself from the other sprinters in the finish straight. We might have to have some kind of limit on the number of socially distanced.
Yeah, a limit of one, I think.
A very, very convincing beard as well.
Yes, but it was good to see him winning, wasn't it? Because of course he was one of the first riders that we knew about who had actually been struck down by COVID-19 at the UAE Tour in February, and I think we talked, didn't we, a few weeks ago how it had since emerged, or Gaviria had since admitted that he had also given the virus to his teammate Max Richese. Had given him a bottle or something. They were horsing around, and Richese ended up getting infected as well, but they both recovered, or they seemed to recover fine, and the result in the first stage of Burgos certainly suggested they have. But Gaviria, it was interesting listening to him after the stage just talk about how as far as the race is concerned and the racing, not much feels as though it's changed, but it was difficult to get used to, for example, not being able to give interviews, or he said usually we like to just have a chat with the journalist, do them a favor, and we can't do that anymore. And he, one thing he did say about the racing as well is that you can already sense the sort of desperation, the latent desperation in the peloton, people desperate to prove themselves, particularly riders who might be out of contract at the end of the year.
Well, we kind of delayed the recording of this podcast simply to be able to watch the third stage, which finished up the climb in Burgos. The climb, Daniel, being
Picón Blanco. Do you know, I looked at where that was on a map. So the landscape today, obviously we're in August and it's a bit of a heat wave in Spain at the moment, in that part of Spain, but it was very arid, you wouldn't say it was particularly green or verdant at all. And it was about 20 kilometres from Los Machucos, which I think you've both been to on the Vuelta. Mm. Certainly the Vuelta's been there twice in the last few years. And that's in Cantabria, so just over the border of Cantabria, and it's incredibly green and a sort of typical landscape of the mountains there in Cantabria. It looked very, very different, looked worlds away.
A quick translation of Picón Blanco.
The big white peak.
There you go. Well, it was interesting, wasn't it, to see that showdown? We mentioned last week, it's a very, very good field there, very good, strong field. And Mitchelson Scott really took it up with numbers on the climb. They looked very impressive indeed. They had, you know, Jack Haig, the Yates brothers, and Esteban Chavez. And it was Chavez that really threw the first grenade, wasn't it, as far as the kind of the big hitters were concerned. He attacked, took George Bennett with him, and Remco Evenepoel. And it was Evenepoel who was kind of last on, but then he attacked himself and quickly got about 25 seconds and held on for a really, really impressive win. I mean, he looked good on stage one when he went from quite a long way out and, you know, made a very audacious move, a bit too audacious, a bit too ambitious, but he's clearly in great condition. He's still 20 years old, of course. He's going to the Giro d'Italia this year. He's won already this year in Portugal, in Algarve at the start of the year, and in Argentina, of course, as well. But he, this is probably his best win in terms of the quality of the opposition. I mean, he won San Sebastian Classic last year, but in terms of the riders he beat today, you know, some big names, and it was very impressive. And his victory gesture at the end, to sort of blow dust off his collar, well, that certainly caught the eye as well. I see it's on the Belgian news tonight. Quite a, some might say, arrogant gesture in victory from young Remco Evenepoel, but it was an impressive performance, wasn't it?
Yes, no doubt it will send the hype train. Well, the hype train was already in overdrive, but you know, there'll be predictions of sort of 20-year, 30-year dynasties, and you know, 44 Tour de France titles tonight. Yeah, it's difficult not to get carried away, isn't it? Because I think we talked about this a few months ago. I mean, when a rider, or it's not just a bike rider, but any sportsman appears on the scene very young and not only wins, but does so in a manner, well, or appears to be almost shifting a paradigm and just looks aesthetically quite different from the powers that be, or the existing powers. And for me, that's the case with Evenepoel. You know, there's something about his pedal stroke, there's something about the way he looks on the bike, how easy it all looks to him, which is quite exciting and reminds me, I think, you know, when we spoke about this in the past, I talked about cricketers, maybe Brian Lara in, you know, the early 90s is a name that stands out for me, with, you know, had a, just a style that was very different from what was around at the time. And, you know, Usain Bolt, we've seen it, we saw it with him, and there have been other examples in other sports. And so it's difficult not to project forward and imagine what he might do at the Giro. But, you know, you have to remind yourself that, okay, he's won every stage race he's competed in this year, but he hasn't ridden, or he hasn't won a race of over a week. He hasn't coped with what he will have to cope with, we think, at the end, or in the last week of the Giro, multiple back-to-back mountain stages. There are also a lot of other prodigious talents who have appeared on the scene in the last couple of years. Pog, of course, Tadej Pogacar, Bernal. So there's a lot to suggest that he won't have everything his own way.
I said Yates brothers. It's only Simon riding in Burgos, of course. Mikel Nieve was the other rider there. Also worth mentioning, Evenepoel's teammate, João Almeida, who was fifth on the stage, was he today? But he was second on stage one as well. And he's only 21, he's 22 next week. He's yet another product of Axel Merckx's development team in America. He looks very promising too. So De Koenig and Quickstep have panned for gold yet again in him, it looks like.
The other thing I should mention, chaps, this is not much of a caveat, but De Koenig and Quickstep have had quite a lengthy mountain training camp in the Dolomites over the past couple of weeks, or in the past month. They were up at Passo San Pellegrino, Ciro, our friend Ciro's least favourite place on earth. But I read an interview with Julien Alaphilippe in L'Equipe a couple of days ago, and he talks about the amount of climbing they'd done there. Presumably Evenepoel has done a similar block of climbing training specifically, so you know, that was maybe one reason why he looked so strong today.
Well, you mentioned the Evenepoel hype train, Daniel. I mean, I know one man who could derail that, with that kind of with a single sentence. Lionel, come on. Just what you're here for.
Well, I did this in February. I did this back in February. I don't want to sound like a stuck record, but it is only the Vuelta a Burgos. I mean, let's keep the performances and the races and the results in perspective. The thing here is that we don't know. Everyone's had 5 months to basically...
Practice cycling.
Yeah, but, you know, who's going to respond well? Who's responding well to that? We're going to see as the weeks unfold.
Not Valverde, by the looks of things. Alejandro Valverde, quite surprised to see him.
He was 15th, Rich.
Yeah.
He wasn't, half an hour down.
No, he wasn't miles off the pace, but I would have expected Valverde, a couple of years ago to be up there on a stage like that.
The problem is Valverde's 40, so when he does computer game cycling, he's using a ZX Spectrum.
I don't have Valverde down as a big... Well, he is a big trainer, isn't he? But I'm not sure he'd be a big indoor trainer. I don't know. I'm just speculating there.
He was third on stage one as well. So
There's life in the old, and I'm not going to say anything to do with dogs. Anyone else impress you, chaps? Not impress you? I thought it was encouraging to see Chavez look so good. Probably the best I've seen him look for a couple of years in on a hard climb. Looked a bit leaner. It's quite a well-kept secret, I think, that over the past couple of years, he's maybe been a little bit heavier than he was when he was, for example, finishing second in the Giro, but he looks lean. And looks good. I mean, this break will have been a big opportunity for some guys if they needed to reset certain things in their career and their training and their outlook on their careers. Then they might have been able to do that in these 3 or 4 months off.
Yeah, I thought that as I watched Fabio Aru as well. A more measured performance, but a glimpse of he finished a minute down, but a glimpse there of something that's been lacking with him the last couple of years. As Valverde, slightly surprised to see him slip off the back. Simon Yates as well, maybe, but it was obviously Chavez today who had the main job. Richard Carapaz as well made quite a big effort to get up to that group, and I think he paid for that. But Ivan Sosa has won this race the last couple of years. He was nowhere today. And really nobody from any... I mean, Carapaz was seventh, but Ineos perhaps not really where they want to be today.
We've talked about in the last few weeks the lockdown might have a pretty radical effect on racing in some instances. I don't know what we imagine might happen, that people would start riding backwards or doing somersalts on their bikes, but there was nothing.
We haven't seen Peter Sagan yet.
There was nothing truly unusual. There wasn't anything too esoteric stage, was that?
Your expectations seem to me to be unrealistic, Daniel. George Bennett rode well today. We covered him a bit last year, did an episode of Climb Zero with him at the Vuelta, where he talked a lot about his health problems and the issues he was having with a stitch, and he had some surgery over the winter on that, and I wonder if he is coping better. He's been named in the Jumbo-Visma Tour de France team, of course, recently, and second on the stage today. I thought, he looked sharp. He was quick to react to Chavez, and I think he'll be pretty happy with that result.
Just to finish on that, context did everything. This is a level up from the Volta Algarve back in February. I mean, the climb that Evenepoel won on there was...
When he wins the Giro, Lionel, you're going to be saying, yeah, but it's not the Tour de France, is it?
No, but there's a bit of a difference between Picon Blanco, which is, 8.5 kilometres at 8.9% average gradient. I mean, that's a big level up, actually, from what he did in Algarve. But it's another, quite a big step from that to the Dolomites, isn't it? I mean, as Daniel said, back-to-back stages. And I'm just trying to... I'd rather just dampen down sort of rampant expectation on a young man's shoulders. I think there's going to be plenty of that. The Belgians have probably already started etching his name on the roll of honour.
There are already streets being named after him as we speak.
Any thoughts, chaps? I'm just sort of dangling the bait here. Any thoughts about the celebration, the dust off the shoulder?
Slightly uncomfortable with that.
I don't think it'll go down too well.
Entertaining, though, isn't it? Entertaining. Well. I mean, it's the sort of thing that fires people up when they see it. I mean, it's the sort of thing you've got to back up. You've got to back it up as well. I mean,
we kind of we moan about lack of personality or you know, lack of big characters, and then we can't complain when a 20-year-old comes along and does that. But we were chatting before we started recording, Daniel. You were sort of you're salivating at the prospect of a Pog Remco rivalry.
Yeah, I can't see Pog unfurling a moonwalk the next time he wins a mountain stage.
But that's got a lot of promise, hasn't it? Their potential rivalry.
It has, really.
Pogacar, we should say.
Yeah, very different characters. And no, it will be interesting to see how Evenepoel, well, there will be some blowback, I'm sure, to things like the celebration, which is not very different from what we see from footballers all the time when they celebrate a goal. And it reminds me of, you know, some of Peter Sagan's celebrations early in his career, and there was some sort of grumbles and upturned noses at that, weren't there? I remember Fabian Cancellara had some choice words to say about Sagan back then. But yeah,
partly because he'd just been ruled for second.
Thing is, it's the sort of thing that in a bad moment might come back to haunt him. I mean, if he's getting dropped in the Giro and an Androni Domestique is passing him, you know, and brushing his shoulder as he goes past. I mean, you know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword, so to speak. I mean, it's a young man enjoying his moment. What's he supposed to do?
You were there once, Napalm. You know what it feels
that,
like.
You were that young man once.
20 years old and have the world at your feet. Yeah.
What went wrong?
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That said, PK interrupting this week's episode to remind me to tell you that it is sponsored by Lacca. Lacca's collective cover is made especially for cyclists for life on and off your bike. Lacca's flipped the outdated traditional insurance model on its head with no more fixed upfront premiums. Instead, your monthly contributions are based on the collective's claims that month. Your maximum monthly price is capped, but the savings are all yours. Plus, 80% of your money goes straight back into the collective, fixing, replacing, and helping. And the other 20% keeps their wheels spinning. It's as simple as that. And when things go bad, Lacca's got your back. Claims are handled by experts and usually agreed within a day with no depreciation or excess. They've ditched annual contracts locking you in. With Lacca, if you want to leave, you can anytime. If you head over to lacca.co, that's lacca.co, new customers can get £10 credit by signing up today with the discount code PODCAST. And for the rest of 2020, you can join the Lacca Club for just £1. Get third-party liability cover plus stacks of awesome cycling discounts from Komoot, Sports Pursuit, and many more. You needn't be a Lacca bike policyholder to join the Lacca Club. Anyone can join, from weekend club riders to the everyday commuter. It's a nasty thing to think about, but third-party insurance could come in really useful. If you were involved in an incident with a pedestrian, motorist, or cyclist while out on the road, you could end up being sued to cover court costs, medical costs, loss of earnings, and lots of other nasty surprises. With £2 million worth of coverage, it's in these exact circumstances where Lacca's third-party liability cover is designed to protect you. Take out the £1 offer today by heading to lacca.co/club. That's lacca.co/club. Well, we're just a couple of days away now, chaps, from that huge date that we've all been looking forward to all year. Indeed, for the last 39 years, 51 weeks, and 5 days. Strada Bianchi is on Saturday, August the 1st. It's also your birthday, Dan.
Yeah, it's also the cup final. It's also the cup final day.
We shall sing you out today with a rendition of Happy Birthday or something that we're allowed to sing for rights reasons. Lionel will clear it. Anyway, Strada Bianchi, it's on. I mean, it feels like we're kind of tiptoeing towards races, not taking anything for granted at all. You know, we saw last week in Spain that there were late withdrawals from teams unhappy at the health protocols. We've seen in Burgos that these are going to be very strict. They're going to be casualties. And I guess we won't really be confident that Strada Bianchi is on until we see it with our own eyes unfolding on Saturday, but as major races go, it's a great one to have back so early, because it's a spectacular, beautiful race, normally held in quite cold conditions in early March, or often cold conditions, set to be very hot at the weekend. So it'll be a different race. Will that make it a different race, do you think, the heat and the time of the year?
Yeah, I think it'll be very different, Rich, because it's going to be a hot day, and on those particular roads there's not a lot of shade, and we will be in August, so I think it's going to be different, a bit of a shock to the system for most of the riders. It's going to be, well, I think for all of the riders it's going to be their first race, isn't it, or first major race anyway. A lot of the big guns are out, certainly as far as classics and one day races are concerned, the likes of Sagan, Van Avermaet, Alaphilippe is the defending champion, of course. So yeah, it should be a cracker. Unfortunately, on at the same time as the cup final.
Well, shall we hear from someone who's going to be on the start line in Tuscany, in Siena, in Tuscany on Saturday? Mitch Docker, host, of course, of Life in the Peloton, who the podcast that Mitch has hosted for a number of years, but which we host it
on our platform. And actually, his chat with Luke Durbridge this week, in this week's episode, really interesting on Strada Bianchi. Mitch has never ridden it before, and Luke Durbridge's ridden it many times. Some interesting stuff about equipment choices and tyre choices and things like that.
And also the idea of pros training on gravel, something that a few years ago everyone would have said, are you mad riding your road bike on gravel? And now it's completely flipped round, and are you mad you're not practicing riding your road bike on gravel? So I know that Mitch has been riding on seeking out the gravel roads in and around Girona, where he lives. He's also been training in Andorra, and on Wednesday he took a flight across to Italy and is looking forward to his first race since the restart. Mitch, back in March we were recording an episode of Life in the Peloton. You'd sat down with Luke Durbridge to go through the post bag, and you were looking forward to riding Strada Bianca in Tuscany in Italy and sampling the white roads for the first time. And of course COVID-19 meant that the race was cancelled, and there's been no racing since until this week. The pro racing has started back up again, and you're back in action this coming weekend at Strada Bianca. Not a spring race any longer, but a race being held in the height of the Tuscan summer. Talk me through what you'll do from this point now through to race day on Saturday.
As we talk now, I've sort of got my last load in the legs. I've had a few easy days. I finished a massive block. Emphasis on the word massive, because it really did feel big, because the lead up has been more or less from that lockdown. I never really stopped, because it was always like racing could happen, racing mightn't happen. And as the story goes, I've done the biggest build up I've ever done. I shut it down on Friday. I had some easy days, and today was the last hit out. And actually I met up with Luke Durbridge, and we did our own little Strada Bianchi around in here in Girona, picked out some white roads or dirt roads on the road bike, and Durbo's ridden it a few times, so he was sort of showing me the ropes. For me, it was getting the feeling of riding gravel on a road bike and following a wheel on the gravel. So to that was today. Got the last load in, and tomorrow I'll travel either a day off or a cruisy ride if I can get out early in the morning. My kids will make sure that I'm up nice and early. Don't worry about that. And then I'm on the plane, which I think is going to be pretty interesting experience. I'm sort of in the back of my mind expecting the worst, so anything better than that will be great. And once we get down there in Italy, on the physical side of things, I've got a couple easy days there with, you know, the typical pre-race hit out on the day before the race. But I'm really leaving everything open. I just don't know what's going to happen. And I'm very, not skeptical, but I'm just aware that things could go sideways. So I've just got to be ready for that mentally and not lose my way because, you know, my normal race plan hasn't gone to point. I'm just like, okay, things could not go to schedule, so just be ready for that. And as long as I'm ready to race on Saturday, I think that's the most important thing. That's sort of where I'm at the moment.
yeah, what will be, rather than if pinning everything on something happening just in case. I can understand that. When you say about the flight, kind of thinking of the worst, is it just that sense of being around groups of people in a confined space? Everyone will be wearing masks, I guess. It's going to be, I mean, I've not been on a flight yet, and it's certainly something that I'm not exactly relishing. It's not, I guess that's what you're alluding to, isn't it? Just the experience of getting on a flight in these weird circumstances.
I think also just the process of it. You know how you can sort of get to an airport and expect to walk through, you know, the security check and get to your seat and get on the plane and everything be smooth? That never happens, as you know. It always gets blown way out and you always get pissed off. You always get like this whole airport sort of personality you always hate. Everyone's a weird person at the airport. So if I think if I'm sort of aware and ready for that, and that's going to be like times by 10 because it's going to be like a million sanitizers and a million checks and, you know, I'm just preparing for that, and that I can get there and just be like, by the time I get to the millionth, I'll be like, all right, now I'm pissed off, but at least it's not at the 10th, you know? And I think that's going to be the key, is just trying to keep your head on. And if there isn't a million checks and we get through pretty cruisy, then I'm winning. You know, that's what I'm preparing for. And who knows, I'll probably get to the second check and lose my mind and that'll all go out the window. But that's what I'm ready for.
Have you had any heads up on what the protocol will be around the race and how different it might be?
I've just heard a little bit from the guys at Burgos, or just before, as you know, it's just weird with the masks everywhere. And even just, you know, reading about teams not being able to go because they've been in touch with a rider who has contracted COVID. And I just think that's going to be a little bit of the trend at the moment, that you've just got to be aware and ready for, like I said, the worst. You know, potentially someone that you were training with a couple of days before, he may have contracted it or show symptoms, and all of a sudden you're out of that race that you prepared for, you rested for, you fueled for. As a cyclist, it sounds funny that you'd get disappointed about that, but everything is a process, and you train hard to a point, you rest, and you allow yourself to fuel up and get ready for the race psychologically, physically, and then all of a sudden to have that race pulled away is such a deflating moment, to not get out there and a chance to expend all that energy, all that built up, you know, freshness, all that sort of stuff, to just come home and just do training. To quickly go to a story, this happened to me last year. I was preparing for London, and this is a bit of a silly story, but I was prepared for the race. I was going to the Vuelta afterwards. London was a great hit out for me. I love that race. And I lost my passport, didn't I? So the night before the race, I'm trying to pack my bag. I'm like, well, the night before to go to the race, I lost my passport. It was the most deflating moment. I ended up doing my own London around here in Girona just to get rid of the steam. I was ready for a race. I did this amazing training run on my own. But that's the feeling I think you sort of got to be prepared for. Unfortunately, it could happen to you. And we've seen it now at Burgos. One of the teams got pulled out. So it's a sad thing, but I think if you're not ready for it, it will crush you even more.
And in terms of the year as a whole, I mean, how do you feel mentally and physically? Because you've not had, it's not been a holiday. It's not been the off season. It's been a period where you've been in sort of suspended animation. You've had to keep training, but I mean, you've known for a number of weeks now roughly when the resumption would be. So at least you've had that to fix on. But do you feel kind of physically fresh and mentally fresh and ready?
It's very weird you say that. I am looking forward to the off season. It's weird that I'm thinking like that because I haven't raced, but it has been, and I'm sure everyone can relate to this, it's been a stressful time. Different stress, but you still, I can't imagine anyone was able to just kick back in their own house and let their hair down and just have a great time. You were still, yes, you weren't working or you weren't racing or you weren't riding, but I don't know, there was this underlying stress. You weren't fully relaxed like an off season. So it's going to be fantastic to race, and I think that's going to be another stress that I'm, like I alluded to at the start, something I'm scared about but want as well. And then ultimately, at the end of that, there'll be this release and this feeling of satisfaction that I can let the hair down and relax. So I am craving that, but I think it would just feel weird if I, for instance, next week went into off-season, because you haven't had that, you haven't earned it, you know, for lack of a better word. You're like, you need to earn it, you know, and training doesn't earn it for me. Even though I sort of mentally feel like it, I still need to physically bury myself in the ground from some racing to you know, earn a beer or two at the end of this weird season.
Well, interesting to hear from Mitch Docker there. Just looking at the provisional start sheet for Strade Bianche, only two names so far listed for EF Pro Cycling: Alberto Bettiol, Tour of Flanders winner last year, of course, and Mike Woods. The last we saw of him, he was by the side of the road in Paris, having broken his leg quite badly. So he's done well to get himself back, and he'll be going to the Tour de France for that team this year. But two very different riders, aren't they? I mean, Woods is a kind of pure climber, Bettiol a bit more of a classics rider, and it is that sort of race that suits different styles of riders. Again, Durbridge and Mitch Docker were very interesting on life in the peloton this week, talking about the similarities in a way with the Tour of Flanders, in that it doesn't suit riders who need to get out of the saddle to climb, the likes of Valverde, because the minute you get out of the saddle, your rear wheel slips away. So, you know, Kwiatkowski is a former winner, and he's that sort of punchy climber too, but obviously can master the dirt roads. But it does tend to favour riders who have a bit of off-road pedigree. Wout van Aert must be one of the favourites this time, and he has ridden very well before. And it is a strong field. Our friend Pog is riding too. Tadej Pogacar for UAE Team Emirates is down to ride. So what are you expecting? Who's going to win it? Who's going to win it? Come on, Daniel.
I should have done a list, shouldn't I? 18 most likely for this
18
race.
18 most likely.
Yeah. I could easily find 18 good contenders. I'm just looking at the start list now. Dylan Teuns, another one of my perennial picks for a lot of races, actually. And Max Schachmann, I like the look of. And of course, the winner of the last major race before lockdown, Paris-Nice.
Just signed a contract extension, hasn't he, for another few years with Bora Hansgrohe.
And definitely is in that category of riders. You know, there are a number of riders on the start list who you think, in theory, could win this race until, or if you don't consider the last 2 kilometres, which are very steep and uphill. And it's hard to see someone who doesn't go well on a steep sort of Mur de Huy type climb winning. And Schachmann is definitely someone who is not going to be afraid of the climb into Siena. So he's got a great chance, I think.
Søren Krogh Andersen is my tip. Also, just on the basis of, again, basically my research this week has all been listening to Mitch Docker and Luke Durbridge, because they were talking about Michael Valgren and the stories circulating around about the amount of training that he's been doing, 50-hour weeks apparently. So Michael Valgren's got, there were signs at the end of last year that he was getting on top of things.
I think he's notorious for that, and it has also been suggested that that's why he wasn't going well for a long time. He was
right. Well, I'll take
much.
Him off my list again. Sorry. Then Søren Krogh Andersen, my tip. There you go.
Very speculation heavy. This. I mean, it's like plucking a name out of the air, because this is the fascinating thing about it. We just don't know who's going to go well when the hammer goes down. And just to reinforce a point that Mitch has made about not knowing how the legs and the head are going to respond when suddenly it's not yourself setting the pace. The riders have been training and e-racing, and there's a certain sense of self-control. You're more in control when you're out training, doing efforts. When somebody else is setting the tempo, somebody else is forcing the pace, how will everyone respond? And that's going to be the most fascinating thing about the race, really, as well as the fact that we don't know how seriously everyone's going to be taking it. And as Mitch has said a number of times on his podcast recently, there's such a condensed season now, so few real opportunities, but in such a tight time frame, it could well be that everybody's up for it right from the start, and we see even more aggressive type of racing. And Daniel, as you made the point about the temperature, it's going to be a warm day in Tuscany. The white roads, even if it's a dry day in March, there'd be a little bit of moisture in that dust. I think the riders are expecting it to be extremely dusty if they're not, you know, right at the front. If you're in a group behind some cars, trying to get back up, it could be pretty unpleasant in an absolute cloud of dust. But it's going to be spectacular to watch for that very reason.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thanks very much to our longtime sponsor, Science in Sport, for their support. You can still get 25% off at scienceinsport.com with the code SISCP25. You will find that in the show notes as well if you haven't got pen and paper handy. Let's hear from James Morton again, the Director of Performance Solutions at Science and Sport. He works with Team Ineos and Liverpool Football Club as well, or has done in the past. And I asked him about the next innovations, because the whole world of sports nutrition has changed a lot in the last decade or so. And so I wondered where the next big developments might be, and how do they anticipate them at Science and Sport?
In many scenarios, we do have enough existing knowledge to provide a solution. And quite often what happens in sport is the existing knowledge isn't actually being applied to actually have the performance benefit. And that's really the whole concept of the Performance Solutions team at Science and Sport. So we've broken that Performance Solutions team into a knowledge team, which is responsible for science and innovation. And then we also have a performance delivery team. And those guys are responsible for them working in the elite sports as high performance practitioners, delivering the solutions to the performance questions. So again, along those lines of thinking, really at Science and Sport now, we have a knowledge and innovation team. We've got a lab at Liverpool John Moores University, where if we have a performance question that we feel that we don't have an answer to, then we can go and do the studies and provide the answers. And then we have the performance delivery team that then take that into practical applications in sport. I mean, at present, we have two full-time practitioners working in Team Ineos as part of their nutrition team. We have a practitioner working in Ineos sailing team. And we're also about to start some work with the Lionesses, with the FA, looking at nutritional solutions for female athletes.
That was James Morton of Science and Sport. And he has invited questions from you. Do keep them coming in. Contact at thecyclingpodcast.com. And I'll go to him with your questions in the next couple of weeks. And we'll hear his responses in the episodes. And there's nobody more knowledgeable than him about sports nutrition. So it's a great opportunity. We've mentioned Science and Sport's new Turbo Plus range to help with indoor training when it tends to be hotter, but also outdoor cycling in the heat. And I've not been on my indoor trainer at all because the weather here has been spectacular, but I have been getting out on the road a lot and it has been very hot. And I have been using my Turbo Plus drink and the gels as well with menthol. And the sensation is that your mouth and whole body cools down when you have it. So I have been quite enjoying that. It's very refreshing, obviously. I mean, that's what menthol is, isn't it? It's refreshing. And your batches, your bundles, chaps, are in the post, I am assured. So you should get them very soon. Promise. I mean, they haven't accidentally been sent to me by mistake. Don't worry. Have you been doing any cycling, Lionel?
I have, yeah. I've not been doing 50 hours a week.
50 hours a week?
Like Michael Valgren, which is almost a third of the week. I mean, assuming he sleeps 8 hours a night, that's another third. I mean, he's got to do everything else. Everything else in the other eight
what
hours.
What else is
available.
There to do if you're a professional cyclist?
Rest, fuel.
True. We'll see if that works for him, because he had a dreadful season last year, Valgren, having, you know, been a real sort of marquee signing for Dimension Data, now NTT. But, you know, there were signs at the end of the year, in Canada and at the World Championships, that he'd turned the corner. Maybe he'll be the signing for NTT that they thought they were getting last year. Who knows?
One thing that has arrived in the post, Richard, is the new cycling podcast Katusha jerseys.
Oh, have you got yours?
A box has arrived. I've yet to open the box. I'm gonna open the box as soon as.
I've seen on social media that people have been getting their jerseys. So
why are you shaking your head, Dan?
Now.
You don't even deign to open box. You know.
It wasn't. It's not deign. I haven't had time. I came in. Right, I had to record. I had to record the podcast.
Lionel's assistant opens boxes for him, and I think your assistant's having a day off. Is that right, Lionel?
Absolutely. I've just got willpower. I really wanted to open the box, but I thought I'd just wait until I've got time to savor the jerseys as they come out.
But they look beautiful, and they are available now. So if you go to thecyclingpodcast.com/shop, you will be able to buy the jersey. The T-shirt is coming in September. You will not, unfortunately, be able to buy a Friend of the Cycling Podcast mug, because Stacey Snyder did a batch of those last week, and they sold out immediately. So she's going to do another batch. We did ask for people to let us know if they want to be given advance notice.
We did, yes. You sign up for our newsletter. You can do that on thecyclingpodcast.com as well. Just you get a weekly bulletin from either Richard or I talking about what's going on at the Cycling Podcast behind the scenes. We're you know, we write a little piece, don't we? Also, Simon Gill has been doing a photo of the week, and you can buy Simon's pictures on his website. But on there, there's also a link so that you can let us know that you'd like to be given a heads up next time Stacey Snyder's mugs go on sale. And we will give anyone who responds to that, sends us an email through by clicking on our newsletter, we'll give them a little bit of an advance warning when they're going to go on sale.
And there will be another batch of Stacey's mugs available during the Tour de France, raising money for a still-to-be-determined good cause. And we asked for nominations for good causes that support or promote diversity in cycling. And we've had a couple, actually, and we've investigated a couple more. So we will pick one. But if you've got one, please email us at contact@thecyclingpodcast.com. What else are we looking forward to, chaps? I mean, it's not just Strade Bianche this weekend. It's also Occitanie down in the south of France. Big stage race starts also on August the 1st. And I guess the most intrigue around that will be centering on Team Ineos, whose team you could imagine might be their Tour de France team, minus Geraint Thomas. It's a very strong team indeed. Thomas is the only one who might be added to that to make it to Nice at the end of August. What do you guys reckon?
Yes, Rich, they're bringing the heavy artillery, aren't they? I noticed stage two finishes at Cap Découverte, famous for what, chaps, in cycling?
That was where the Ulrich versus Armstrong time trial was in 2003.
Correct, where Jan Ulrich smoked Armstrong in the time trial in 2003. The race will probably be decided, as it usually is in this race, on the stage that goes over the Porte de Balaise, which is stage three this time, which will be Monday, if I'm not mistaken. It doesn't finish. Usually, or often, the stage finishes just on the other side of the Porte de Balaise.
Porte de Balaise, famous for?
Chain gate.
Well, and yeah, Andy Schleck's chain jumping in 2010.
Yep, beef between Schleck and Contador.
Don't mention beef and Contador, Rich.
Roman Bardet is riding AG2R, not in the news roundup, but they've got a new co-sponsor, haven't they, from next year, Citroën, which they say will put them in the big league of budgets. But they may be looking, well, they've apparently signed Greg Van Avermaet, but they may be looking for another kind of GC rider to replace Bardet if he moves, as is rumoured.
Last sponsored a team in late 70s, I think, Citroën, in about 1978, in fact, they sponsored the Fiorella Mocassini Citroën team.
They recently launched a couple of bikes as well.
They had their logo on the La Vie Claire jersey for a while as well. Got that in my mind's eye, Bernardino with a Citroën logo. The double chevrons, but that weren't obviously in the team's title.
And of course, Rich, Lucky Larry has re-signed. Larry Warbath,
the Texan cowboy, has signed for another 2 years. He's been on 2 1-year deals, so I think getting a 2-year deal is a great result for him, and will be a bit of security for the next couple of years. So he's obviously made a good impression at the team, Larry Warbath. But yeah, I mean, that's going to be a fascinating race to watch, and an important one, I think, for Ineos, just to see how Bernal and Froome operate together, and in particular how Froome is, you know, after this is really his first race back since his crash the Dauphiné last June. So it's going to be fascinating to see how he competes in this race.
It's interesting as well, Rich, they seem to, Ineos, just looking from the outside, they seem to have really kind of created and tried to consolidate this group of riders who are going to do the tour together. I think they've done a lot of riding and training together all year. And that won't be the case of some of the Grand Tour teams. You know, riders have been scattered all around the world. I mean, it was one thing that I really noticed as well early in the season at Paris-Nice, just observing some of the teams. And, you know, you look at them early in the season and it really does look like, in some cases, a group of individuals who have been thrown together and don't really know each other very well at all. The opposite was true, I noticed, and this is something that's been building over a few years, of Thibaut Pinot's team at Groupama Française des Jeux, and you know, that's one thing that I think will help him come Tour de France time. But Ineos have really tried to create and double down on this some kernel of riders who were clearly going to do the tour, with or without Froome.
Anyway, lots to look forward to, fellas, over the next week or so. And I must say, it has been great watching a bit of racing the last couple of days. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Burgos is beautiful, and it's been good racing to watch, for one thing. Nice to see a peloton speeding through Europe. Also good to just see fans at the side of the road as well. Not in huge numbers as you'd expect, and mainly are all wearing face masks. But nice to see, and we saw that last week in the Basque Country in particular as well, for the women's races. That's encouraging, I think, to see as well, as long as, you know, the crowds aren't too big and the people aren't getting too close, and they are wearing face masks and taking all the precautions and so on. It's just been nice to feel a bit of a return to some kind of normality. For all that, cases in Europe have been going up alarmingly in some places, and there are concerns about whether races will go ahead in the next few weeks. It's been nice to see that it can happen at the moment. Shall we wrap things up there? I've got a serious job to return to, so I better get on with that. That's enough moonlighting on the cycling podcast for me this week, but I'll be back next week with an episode of Femina as well.
I've got to go and open the cycling podcast Katusha jerseys.
I hope you hope that's all over social media.
Hopefully I can fit into whatever we've been sent
the
here.
Big reveal. Well, if it's all over social media, then we'll know that that's been successful. If it's not, well, we'll report back next week. In the meantime, thanks very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, chaps.